So many of you, I just suggested that the elderly devotees could take it easy. I mean, they can have a break. The idea behind that was, since there's so many, they could probably take a little rest. But then I felt that it was, I mean, why should I exclude anybody? And I saw that as a result of that, many of you didn't raise your hands, and I was feeling very bad about it. Thank you very much. And I'm sorry about that. Hare Krishna. Okay, so first group is being represented by Gopika.
Haribo.
Haribo.
You set the camera?
Yeah, I'm just doing it.
So in the previous chapter, the last verse ended with saying, the yogi who thinks of, Krishna saying this, the yogi who thinks of me most is the most dear to me. So connecting that to the seventh chapter, how do you think of somebody all the time? It's by loving them. And in the first verse, Krishna gives us kind of a way of how we can learn to love him. And I think that was the most important concept in the first verse, is by hearing him. I think the word was like that trinu or something, by hearing. Krishna says, now hear from me. So it's like he's giving us a way, like this is how we can love him, by hearing about him. And so in the second verse, Krishna kind of breaks up into two categories, everything. And he says there are two types of knowledge, vijnanam and jnanam. And he's basically establishing in these verses that he's the source of everything. Like, there's nothing beyond this. He says, you don't need to know anything more than this. This is it. I'm the source of everything. And he says, he breaks it up a little further. He goes earth, water, fire, air, ether, and then beyond this is a superior energy. And it's the concept seems quite simple, because he's just saying, I am the source of everything, and just accept it. I mean, he's really kind of establishing who he is. And while it may seem like it's a very simple concept, at the same time he says, out of thousands of men, only one really knows this truth. And I think he also mentions in another translation, the reason is because the living entities think that his inferior energy is actually theirs. So they exploit it, thinking that this is mine. But Krishna is saying, no, everything is mine. So that's the reason. So, yeah, that's the first six.
Thank you. Okay, next group, is being represented by Rati Manjari. I don't know whether... do you all know Rati Manjari?
No.
Oh, I see. Yeah, she... Rati Manjari is originally from South Africa. And she joined in 1990 in Durban.
In Cape Town.
Oh, in Cape Town, right. In Cape Town. And then Rati Manjari went to Oxford to study. And then she got married to one very wonderful devotee, Gurudas Prabhu. And Gurudas actually joined in 79. He's a very senior devotee. He used to be, at 1 year, he was the world number one book distributor. And he came yesterday. I'm sorry I didn't introduce them. Now, Rati and Gurudas lives in Denver. Gurudas runs a business. And they have a little daughter, Anjali, 5 years old. And so that's, we are very happy to have you here today.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I feel so enlivened being here. It's just been a very nice experience.
Before she joined, she was studying medicine. And she gave up, and her parents were very upset, naturally. Then I happened to meet her mother. And she was specifying.
It was a turning point. She told me that I really trust that she chose for me. So that was amazing. Okay, thank you so much. So we start from text 7. O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung upon a thread. So Krishna, as we discussed, starting to say here how, you know, we might get different pearls that we might see on a necklace, but the thread in the middle is what's holding them together, even though that might be invisible. We know with some knowledge that that thread is there, and Krishna then gives examples of how we can see that thread that is keeping the pearls together in the world around us, and also ways that we can think of him, which is relating to the last verse of the previous chapter. So the next few verses are describing that. It says, O son of Kunti, I am the taste of water, the light of the sun and moon, the syllable Om in the Vedic mantras. I am the sound in ether and the ability in man. So there were different contributions from our group that came up to say how Krishna is giving very ordinary examples there for people to think of him and remember him. You don't have to be a great pundit or someone very intelligent, very strong, very wealthy, with supervision. Everybody tastes water. Everybody sees the light of the sun and moon. So he's giving very accessible and very obvious ways to say, I am there. A syllable Om in the Vedic mantras, the sound in ether, and the ability in man. I am the original fragrance of the earth, and I am the heat in fire. I am the life of all that lives, and I am the penances of all ascetics. So Prabhupada explains there also in the purport that we discussed, the original fragrance of the earth. He says, punya means that which is not decomposed. Punya is original. Everything in the material world has a certain flavor or fragrance, as the flavor and fragrance in a flower or in the earth or in water, in fire, in air, etc. The uncontaminated flavor, the original flavor which permeates everything, is Krishna. Similarly, everything has a particular original taste, and this taste can be changed by the mixture of chemicals. So everything original has some smell, some fragrance, and some taste. But Krishna is that original of everything. So we may see things in this world in different ways, but we might be seeing them a little bit adulterated due to our vision or their presence in this world for different reasons. But the actual unadulterated origin is Krishna. O son of Pritha, know that I am the original seed of all existences, the intelligence of the intelligence, and the prowess of all powerful men. So we also came up with that Krishna is giving these superlative examples of great strength or great intelligence, that we can understand that when we see anything great in this world, Krishna is behind that also. And we also talked how that's a great thing in this world. People notice greatness, but often there's envy there. It doesn't really go to something good. But Krishna's giving a way that we can see greatness and appreciate Krishna behind that, so it can take us more in a good direction than a bad direction towards Krishna's lotus feet. And the original seed of all existences, that also was reminding us that if we really acknowledge and understand that Krishna is the origin of all existences of our own existence, that naturally will bring out surrender, because we could not even exist if it was not for Krishna. So how can we think that we should not surrender? We are fully dependent in every way. Then he's just been saying in verse 10 how he's the prowess of powerful men, the intelligence of the intelligent. But then he makes a qualification of the kind of strength that he has. He says, I am the strength of the strong, devoid of passion and desire. I am sex life which is not contrary to religious principles, O son of the Bharatas, Arjuna. So he's not saying that he's just ordinary strength. People may be strong in this world, but he's the strength of the strong which is devoid of passion and desire. So again, he has an extraordinary nature to his strength. He's not just something ordinary. And we may see that in this world, but know that Krishna is even beyond that. And that is leading up to what he says in text 12, that know that all states of being, be they of goodness, passion, or ignorance, are manifested by my energy. I am in one sense everything, but I am independent. I am not under the modes of material nature, for they, on the contrary, are within me. So he's given all these examples from material nature, but he's saying here, I may be the source of all those things, but I am independent. I'm above and beyond all of those. I am not under the modes of material nature. And Srila Prabhupada explains, therefore, Krishna is nirguna, which means that these gunas or modes, although issuing from him, do not affect him. And that in itself just gives us a realization of how Krishna is so beyond, because if something normally comes from something, it is the same. But in this sense, he's the source of material nature. And as he says in text 10, he is like the root of the tree. He's maintaining material nature. Everything in the material existence is maintained because of Krishna, but at the same time, he's completely aloof, nirguna, and beyond that material nature. So he explains both himself as separate from material nature, the source of material nature, and visible within the material nature, but ultimately beyond material nature. So maybe I should ask if there's something that I left out.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Group number 3, presented by Naveen Shyam.
So picking up on this theme that the previous group of ended with Krishna being beyond the modes. So he is beyond the modes, but we aren't. We're under the influence of the modes. So this group of verses starting with the idea that we have to actually transcend, go beyond the modes to know him, because he's beyond them. And that the way to do that is take assistance from someone who is connected with Krishna, so who is also beyond the modes, the bona fide spiritual master, by surrender, this process of surrender. We take assistance, and then we can also transcend. So, but there's four types of people who don't surrender. And these are atheistic people. Basically, the common factor here is that their efforts, their intelligence, and their activities, energy, is against God's plan. It's not centered on God. So the fools who are working hard for themselves, they have some selfish motive. Those who even have some maybe social philosophy or even a religion, but it's not, doesn't have actually God in the picture, so it's not a real religion. Those who are learned, but again, without God in the picture, against God. And then those who are just outright, there's not even some idea of, oh, we want to work, we have some philosophy or have some learning, but just against God very openly. So these four types, they don't surrender, and so they're not going to surrender to spiritual master, they're not going to transcend, they're not going to know Krishna. But there are four types of people that that do surrender. So there's Krishna is in the picture. Three of those types of people, they're still attached to some material results, but and so they're as long as they are maintaining that attachment, they're not able to fully transcend and know Krishna. But because Krishna is in the picture, there's still some exchange of affection, and so they make some advancement. Until they realize that all these material results are useless. They don't have that full relationship with Krishna, but the one in full knowledge of his status as a servant of the Lord, he never forgets the Lord, and so that relationship is much stronger, and then he's actually able to fully transcend. And then one point that kind of came across the verses was the importance of the devotee's mercy, that actually, what to speak of these three types that already Krishna is in the picture, actually by the devotee's mercy, they can elevate to that highest platform of being complete knowledge. But even Srila Prabhupada is explaining that these atheistic personalities who are actually against God, if they also get the devotee's mercy, they're able to come to that standard of knowing Krishna and able to transcend the modes.
Thank you. The group number 4 is being represented by Nilamani Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. So our first verse was verse 19, which is actually logically belongs to our previous group. They're wrapping up that section with saying that a devotee is actually a very rare soul. Bhavanam janmanamante nanamamam prapajyante. And there's many, many references in other scriptures. Our scriptural source, Vrindavan Chandra gave us one from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Nityanamapi Siddhanam Narayanam Parayana Sudurlabha Prashnatma Koti Swacha Mahamuni. So that of many, many siddhas and so forth, hardly one is a Narayana Parayana, a worship of Narayana. And such a soul is very, very rare. Sudurlabha Prashnatma. The main theme of our verses was actually around the subject of demigod worship. And Krishna very clearly states that it's men of small intelligence that worship demigods. And they worship demigods really because of lust. They try to fulfill their own desires through worship of demigods. They experience that demigods can be pleased very easily. By worship, they get their results rewarded. And Krishna states that, yes, the demigods do reward these people because of their worship, but actually all of those benefits are actually endowed by me alone. And Krishna then says that really only those who worship me can return to me. The worshippers of the demigods go to the planets of the demigods, but those who worship me come to me. Madbhaktya yanti mamati. So in conclusion to this series of verses, those who worship demigods really are motivated by lust, but the devotee who worships Krishna, he is motivated by love, or love is required to worship Krishna. And we have one more scriptural reference, which I'm going to ask Vrindavan Chandra to quote. So from the Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Our desire fulfilled is lust, and then Krishna's desire, fulfilling Krishna's desire is love. That's what we should be doing, fulfilling Krishna's desire, not our desires.
Thank you.
And the fifth group is being represented by Atit Prabhu. Atit is from Canada. And the very good boy.
So our group discussed the last set of verses for the chapter, and I guess text 25, which is related to the previous group, and Krishna says that, you know, it kind of summarizes that I'm never manifest to the foolish and the unintelligent, which is which are the people he talks about, like, you know, whose intelligence has been stolen because of lust, or people like, you know, impersonalists. So the point here is Prabhupada explains that Krishna is actually, although he was available, he was here on the earth, but he's actually only revealed to his devotees, and for the non-devotees, he's covered by his internal potency, and that's why those people actually don't really see Krishna as, or understand Krishna as being the supreme or the unborn and the infallible. So that's 25. In verse 26, Krishna says that Arjun, I know everything that has happened in the past and all that is happening in the present, and also about the future. And I know everybody, but no one knows me. So again, ties, you know, the same point as was mentioned in the verse 3, where that, you know, Krishna knows everything, but it also establishes, but, you know, as super soul in everybody's heart, he knows what goes in everybody's heart, as well as what happened in the past and in the future. But we as individual living entities actually do not know. And just one point, and he will explain how, you know, when he says no one knows me. So in the following verse, which is verse 27, Krishna explains that everybody or all living entities are born into delusion, which is what we had also discussed in the morning, including Lord Brahma. So we are born in ignorance and delusion, which is actually a result of the dualities, you know, arising from the same happiness and distress, and again driven by individuals, you know, the lust, as was mentioned before, you know, the desire to enjoy or you know, and desire or hate, as they say, but thinking all about themselves versus thinking about Krishna. So Krishna is just explaining that who are the people who don't know me, because, you know, everybody is born in ignorance, and until they make take the step of getting out of that ignorance by surrendering to a bona fide spiritual master. Those who know the knowledge, they won't be able to know Krishna. So moving on in verse 28, Krishna actually now talks about the people who are eligible for getting becoming Krishna consciousness or actually overcoming this so-called ignorance. And he says people who have previous credits or pious credits in their previous lives, as well as who have worked their way through by eradicating or eliminating their sinful actions, which means they are setting the stage for actually coming up to the level of transcendental knowledge and becoming Krishna consciousness. So those are the people who actually start to render devotional service unto the lotus feet of Krishna. And in verse 29, he moves on and says, now he kind of switches from, after talking about people who are foolish and unintelligent, now he talks about persons who are considered intelligent, and who are those people who are actually endeavoring for liberation, which is to get out of this repeated cycle of birth and death. So those are the people who actually take up to devotional service, and because they have got that transcendental knowledge, and with that fire of transcendental knowledge, they are actually working to burn their previous karmas and really come to the transcendental level. So, and in the last verse, which is verse 30, it's like a summary. So Krishna is just kind of summarizing to Arjuna, saying, those who are in full consciousness of me, that is, who know me as the supreme creator or the supreme personality of Godhead, the supreme proprietor, they actually would remember me even at the time of death. So, in other words, Prabhupada explains how one can become a fully Krishna conscious person. So, that's it from our group.
Okay, very good. So, do you think these interactive sessions are good? You like it? Do you want to continue with the same groups tomorrow? Or do you want us to change the group?
There will be more.
Yeah. Okay, we'll make some more groups. And from tomorrow, everyone have to participate. Shishila, you have to participate. And what's your name?
My name?
Yeah.
Sudha.
Sudha will participate. And you all also have to participate. Your name is? And to me, so all of you will participate tomorrow. No one will be excused. No one needs any rest. And we'll make that group is too big, so we'll divide that group up: the girls group, ladies group, the second ladies group, and this group has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 9. Anyway, and more are coming tomorrow. So, today they are coming. Anyway, so we'll see, we'll make some more groups. And...
I have a question. I have a question related to this.
Okay.
So, in the verse 28, Krishna says that persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, are freed from the dualities of delusion, and they engage themselves in my service with determination. So what does this mean? This means like this word I didn't understand. Whose sinful actions are completely eradicated?
Yeah. You can look at it in two ways. One way is that when our sinful activities are completely eradicated, then only we can become a devotee of Krishna. Right. And the other way to look at it is, when you surrender yourself unto Krishna, then all your sinful reactions get eradicated. So it is, so the second option is the easier option. Don't wait for your sinful reactions to be eradicated and then become engaged in devotional service. No. When you become engaged in devotional service, all your sinful reactions will automatically be removed. So some people may think that first we will become free from our sinful reactions, and then he'll become a devotee.
That's what it looks like from this.
No, no. He says that those, which means, you see, spiritual life is not just a matter of one activity of one lifetime. It's not the achievement of one lifetime. It's a continuous thing. Say, in this life, you make advancement up to here. So in your next life, when you begin, where will you begin from? From here? No, from here. Then in the next life, you go up to there. So in that life, when you begin, like that, you could. So one keeps on moving forward like that. Nothing is wasted. None of your spiritual activities go in vain. They become your assets forever. Why? Because they are with your spirit soul. They are the assets of the spirit soul. So they remain with the spirit soul. The gross body may change, the subtle body may change. But spiritual body is always there. And these assets remain with the spiritual body. So although Krishna is saying that who become engaged in devotional service? Those who have acted piously in their previous life, those who have acted piously in their present life, and in this way who have become totally free from all their sinful reactions, they become my devotees. They surrender unto me. That's one way of looking at it. But then Krishna himself is saying, you surrender unto me, all your sinful reactions will be eradicated. So what should an intelligent person do?
Surrender.
Take the easier option. Yes?
Guruji, Krishna as the Super Soul is always with us and He knows all our desires. So if at some point in our life we desire something, but later on we realize that, oh, that wasn't a good desire. As we mature in our devotional life and we regret, oh, I shouldn't even desire that, because will Krishna even fulfill that even though we realize that it wasn't a good desire and it almost becomes like a punishment?
Well, a classic example is Dhruva Maharaj. He wanted the kingdom of a kingdom greater than his father's. Right? But when he got to know Krishna, when he saw Krishna, when he saw Narayana, he realized what a foolish mistake it was to make. Like he's saying that I was looking for pieces of glass, broken pieces of glass, and I found a diamond. So why should I go for the broken pieces of glass? So we may have our desire, Krishna may fulfill the desire. We have to move along with that, stepping along. Whatever comes. Depend upon Krishna. Some desires Krishna will fulfill, some desires Krishna will not fulfill. But the main thing is, main objective is not to have a desire for our own sense gratification. Let's let all our desires be centered around Krishna's pleasure. Alright? So, yes. Rupeshwar?
Prabhupada talks about pure devotional service and devotional service. What's the difference?
Same. Devotional service, of course, devotional service can be two types. Mixed devotional service and pure devotional service. When devotional service is tinged with material desire, it's called karma mishra bhakti. When the devotional service is mixed with the desire for liberation, it is called Jnana Mishra Bhakti. But when the devotional service is Jnana Karmad Anapritam, is free from the tinge of knowledge and fruitive desires, then that is called pure devotion. Very good. Yes, Sharanagati? Yes, we will not be able to serve Him. But if you try to serve him, he becomes pleased. Right? Come to think of it, you know, why Krishna will need our service? Thousands of Lakshmi Devis are serving Krishna constantly. So why should he want our service? But still, when we try to serve him, he becomes pleased. It's something like a little boy, he got some money, and with the money he bought some chocolates. And he took the chocolate and took to his father and says, "Daddy, Daddy, please take these chocolates. I got them for you." The father doesn't need chocolate, right? Father, but just that gesture that the child is making makes the father so happy. So that is how Krishna feels about our endeavor to serve him. Yes, Jagannath?
What is the perfection referred to in verse 3? Is it a distinction between they've achieved perfection, but they don't know me?
You see, as I said, the perfection actually is to recognize that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and we are His servants. That's the ultimate perfection. To become the humble servant of Krishna is the ultimate perfection. Because that is our constitutional position. That's what we are. We are just servants of Krishna. So anything other than that is our imperfection. Anything other than that, when we are identifying with anything other than that, that is what is causing our imperfection. So our perfection is to just become the humble servant of Krishna.
But he distinguishes that from knowing him.
Yeah, the thing is that knowing him as the Lord and Master, only we can become his servant. Knowing him as the Supreme Master, that is the real knowledge, real knowing of Krishna. Like, knowing Krishna doesn't mean, you know, knowing his universal form or anything else, or as the Supreme, you know, controller. That knowledge is good, but that knowledge is not the perfect knowledge. The perfect knowledge is, you are my Lord and Master. You're the only object of my love.
So if that's what the perfection refers to, then what does the hardly knowing him refer to?
Let me just check that.
Those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth.
Yeah. Knows me in truth is Vasudeva Sarvamiti Sa Mahatma Sudurlabham. You see, Krishna is pointing out that some people aspire for spiritual perfection. That spiritual perfection is, you know, perform, you know, like make some did advancement towards the spiritual direction. So that is, you know, being engaged in religious activities, dharma, following the Vedic instructions, acting according to those understanding, and which will ultimately leads to practicing of yoga, you know, performing austerity. And now one may say, for example, yoga. One may achieve perfection. One may aspire to become a yogi. He leaves home, goes to the Himalayan mountain, lives there for long, long time practicing the yoga. And he may achieve the perfection of yoga, yoga siddhi. But he may not know Krishna. Right? He may achieve perfection, but he may achieve perfection in yoga, but he may not know Krishna. Okay. Right? Although ultimately, if he is properly situated, then the properly situated means when he is directed by a bona fide spiritual master. then he'll come to the platform of understanding that Krishna is the...
So knowing Krishna in truth is what we sometimes refer to as most perfect?
Knowing Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The yoga perfection may give us yoga siddhi. Right? Like, you know, siddhi to perform all kinds of amazing things. Becoming very small, becoming very big, becoming very heavy, becoming very light, or have the ability to fulfill all our desires. Whatever we want, it's immediately achieved. So these are the perfection of yoga. But one doesn't necessarily get to know Krishna. But transcending that position, I mean, rather, even out of thousands of such siddhas, one may not know Krishna. Knowing Krishna means knowing Him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When you get to know Him, then what happens? Surrender to Him. So that is the ultimate perfection of life. Yes, Amit?
In verse 4, it talks about transcending the material nature in order to reach spiritual reality. And also you mentioned just a few moments ago that in our devotional, through our devotional service and through the process of birth and death, we can strive to reach the Lord's lotus feet. But initially, when we first started off, you said that we emanated from the spiritual sky and we're fallen souls. So was it something that we did so bad in the spiritual sky that made us come down to this material nature? Because just as that might have happened, we are now striving to go back up to...
Yeah, the thing that... The bad thing that we had done is that we looked away from Krishna. Right? Our consciousness is minute, like a ray of light. Unto how many points one ray of light can fall? One. So it can either be projected towards Krishna or it can be projected away from Krishna. Now when it is projected away from Krishna, where it is projected? Away from Krishna is what? Yes. Krishna's external energy, which is inferior. Now, you are a superior person, came across the inferior. What happens? Automatically, you develop a tendency to lord over. Isn't it a natural tendency of the superior to dominate over the inferior? That's what happens to us. Just because we looked away from Krishna and looked towards Maya, or external illusory energy of the Lord, we developed a tendency to lord over. And we are continuously trying to lord over, trying to enjoy by lording over, trying to enjoy by exploiting this material nature. So that is our problem. That's the mistake. Anyway, now we are stuck here. But if we want to go back, then what do we have to do? The cause of our fall down to this material nature is looking away from Krishna. Now the way to go back to Krishna is look towards Krishna. So that's the meaning of Krishna consciousness. Just project your consciousness towards Krishna. The rest will automatically happen. Yes, Prabhupada.
I have two questions. One was, I want to make a proper understanding of surrender. Is when we follow the rules of Vaidhi Bhakti, is that samama, is that also comes under surrender?
Yeah, why are you practicing Vaidhi Bhakti?
Because there is no love. I mean, the love is not...
No, why are you practicing it? Because you have accepted Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And therefore you are surrendering? Therefore you are doing whatever you are doing? If you didn't accept Krishna, if you didn't surrender unto Him, would you practice devotional service?
So the surrender is not full...
Doesn't matter. It may not be full, but you have taken a step towards it. Right? You didn't climb the top of the mountain, but you have stepped out of your house.
Second question is, question was in this verse 29 where Krishna says intelligent persons who are entering for liberation from old age and death take refuge in me in devotional service. They're actually Brahman because they entirely know everything about transcendental activity. How come they're still in the Brahman platform and not?
Brahman platform means spiritually situated. Brahman, you see, there are two nature, material nature and spiritual nature. The spiritual nature is Brahman. Brahman means spiritual. So they are spiritually situated. They have, because they have surrendered to Krishna, they have transcended the cycle of birth and death. And they have become situated in the spiritual life.
So it's not a Brahman realization?
No, no. This is a Brahman realization. Brahman realization, in a sense, not impersonal Brahman realization. It's a personal Param Brahman realization. Right? Yes?
Mine is a three-part question. The first one is going to be a yes or a no answer. Basically, and then I can follow up on the other two or three questions. All this reading that we do, you know, reading from the Bhagavad Gita, reading from the Bhagavatam, from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, is meant to give us a conviction in our chanting. Am I correct?
Yes, yes. Provided you are also aware of what is the purpose of chanting and what is the objective, what's the benefit of chanting. Yeah, because you have to understand, you see, when you understand that chanting is the ultimate spiritual activity, then all your spiritual endeavors will naturally lead to that activity.
The second question, Maharaj, this is, if our chanting is not concentrated, or our chanting we are trying to really, because there's so many japa retreats that are also on just focusing on chanting, getting your mind to focus on chanting, say that that's the ultimate, and that is most likely what is projecting our consciousness towards Krishna, because when we chant, that's the way we are communicating with Krishna. What is it that is lacking after also doing all this reading and knowing the Gyan part, but when it comes to the practical part of now trying to focus on that chanting, the chanting is not really, you feel it, but yes, you're chanting, but it is more mundane or more, it's not really to that state. What do we need?
You see, you can control your mind in two ways. Grab the mind and put it somewhere. Right? And the other is, you appreciate what you are doing, then the mind will automatically be there. Right? Now, out of these two, which one is the easier process? You like some, you like to, say for example, you know, you are taking, you're a child doesn't want to eat. Right? And you just force the child. No, you have to eat. You have to eat. Right? But that's one way of getting the child to eat. The other way is give the child something that it likes to eat. If he gets the taste, then you won't have to tell him eat. He'll come running to you and say, give me, give me, give me. So spiritual life should be like that. It shouldn't be forced. It shouldn't be, you know, unnecessary compulsion. It should be done with the proper taste. That's what we have to find. And how will the taste come? Practice the process in the right way, in the association of good devotees, always being fixed in practicing the process of hearing and chanting, then it will automatically happen.
So just give it time.
Yeah, take your time. There's so many lives, times you have wasted out there. So, just... The point is not how soon we are going to achieve the end. The main consideration is that let us stay on the path. If we stay on the path, and keep moving, then someday we'll reach the goal. And in our case, we don't have to move. The path, and we are not on a path. We are on a lift. Right? Just stay on the lift. And in course of time, the lift will take you there. Right? That's how easy the process has become for us. Just stay in ISKCON. Right? Being loyal to Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. And one fine morning, you'll find yourself there in the spiritual sky. It's as simple as that. And about chanting also, like, you see, there's no need to make this extraneous endeavors to pure chanting. Let's have the clear understanding, a simple understanding, that Krishna wants me to chant, that's why I'm chanting, and Krishna is watching me chanting. And when Krishna sees that I'm chanting, he's happy. So this is how what will happen. Our faith in Krishna will grow. And that faith is the most important consideration. Okay, Hare Krishna. Yes, Mother Sucharya.
I had a question about...
You don't have to stand up. Just okay. Keep sitting.
In the 7th chapter, text 1, the purport, Srila Prabhupada is talking about how karma or realization is incomplete. And he writes here...
Which chapter?
It's chapter 7, text 1. And in the purport...
Yeah. You said 364.
No, I'm sorry. It's page 364 in this book.
No, just the first book.
Oh, that's a different Gita. Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, 7-1. Okay.
In the purport, Srila Prabhupada is saying, by concentrating one's mind upon Krishna...
Which paragraph is that?
It's the first paragraph. Well, actually, it's the second paragraph. About a few sentences down. Prabhupada's writing, by concentrating one's mind upon Krishna, one's able to know the absolute truth completely, but not otherwise. The personal brahmacharya people localized karma and realization is not perfect knowledge of the absolute truth because it is partial. I don't understand why is it partial to know about the super soul, because the super soul is Lord Narayan, and Narayan is from Vaikuntha, so if a person is connected to Vaikuntha, isn't that
okay.
Okay. Part of the beginning?
The difference between a Paramatma realization and Bhagavan realization. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti Shabdati. The Paramatma realization, the Paramatma aspect of the Lord is inactive. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, no doubt, but he is not manifest in his complete and perfect feature as yet. But when there is devotion, then Paramatma is not inactive anymore. He becomes active. So that understanding, that relationship is higher than Paramatma realization. Paramatma realization is in Shantarash. Right? There is no activity. But with the Bhagavan, we have Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya. Madhur relationship. Okay, so I'll stop now. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Prema.